So today's topic is chanting with genuine spiritual feeling. But because yesterday's session was shorter, and because I did deal with the topic of gratitude, I thought I would briefly add one or two more points to yesterday's discussion, and then continue to today's topic. Is this loud enough? The basic idea of humility, as Yogi Purush Prabhu mentioned as well, is that when we seriously try to chant with attention and we realize how weak we are, and at the same time when we observe where our mind goes, we confront the fact that we have turned away from Krishna, and it's hard to turn back to him. And we're actually have two tendencies within us, as Srila Prabhupada said, in Sattva Yuga, the demons and devotees would live on different planets. In Treta Yuga, they would be in different families. There'd be families of devotees and families of demons. In Dwarpa Yuga, you have demons and devotees in the same family, like the Pandu dynasty. And in Kali Yuga, you have the divine and demonic tendencies in the same person. So that is our position. Maybe I should just speak for myself, but that is our position. And when we analyze our thoughts, when we try to chant japa and stray, generally we find that the underlying principle is that I'm the controller, I'm the proprietor, I'm the enjoyer. Now, why are we thinking of these different things? Because underneath it all, we're thinking, you know, I want to control this. I want to possess this. I want to enjoy this. Which is the demonic nature described in the Bhagavad Gita. Ishwaroham, I am the controller. I'm the Lord. Aham Bhogi, I am the enjoyer. So when we realize this about ourselves, it's humbling. It's humbling. I did mention the first verse, Krishna Kirtan, that's your cue. Briefly yesterday, these are the divisions of surrender. And just as we surrender to Krishna, we surrender to the holy name. And it begins As we mentioned yesterday, anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam, to accept things that are favorable and reject things that are unfavorable. Rakshishyati, to have full faith that Krishna will protect us, the holy name will protect us. Because that's part of what we think about, how to protect ourselves, how to protect our families, how to protect our assets, how to protect our position. And if we have faith that Krishna, the holy name, will protect us, we don't have to worry about protecting ourselves. We take normal precautions, but then Goptriptre Varanam Tata, and we accept Krishna as our guardian, like a father or husband or master or maintainer, that he will maintain us. We're also worried, how will we maintain ourselves? But Krishna will maintain us. He's the supreme father of every living entity. As it is, he's maintaining every living entity. So why should he not maintain the souls who have surrendered to him and are engaged in his service? Again, it doesn't mean we don't work according to our position in Varna and Ashram. We have our duties. We do our duties. But ultimately, we have faith that Krishna will protect us. And I've never seen a devotee go hungry. I've just never seen it in my whole life. I had my own little experience when I went to Pakistan for the first time. There was a... maybe Amogalila didn't get my telegram. So when I arrived at the airport in Karachi, there was no one there to receive me, and I had no idea where to go or what to do. So ultimately, I got a taxi and just said, you know, Hindu temple, Hindu temple. And he ended up taking me to the Swami Narayan temple. And the Swami Narayan temple is very big. It's a very big compound with many residences. And amazingly enough, the main deities are Radha and Krishna, whom we named Radha Karachi Ishwara. Well, that's all right. I had a place where I could lie down at night. Just slept on the floor of the Darshan Mandap of the temple. But what about food? What do you do about food in Pakistan? So it turned out that there was a little Hindu hotel, meaning restaurant, nearby. Of course, I didn't have money. I definitely didn't have any Pakistani rupees, and I didn't know Urdu, but anyway, I went to this sort of Hindu hotel near the temple, and they had dal and chapatis, and I don't know how I transacted the exchange, but I got something to eat, and then I lay down at night on the marble floor. And then in the morning, people started to come for darshan. Not many. But people started to come, and I started to ask around, you know, if you know Mogalila, Hare Krishna devotee. And then finally, they told me about a friend who was known to be interested in Krishna consciousness, named Mr. Tirani. So somehow I got his address, I made it to his office, and I met him at his office. So that was good. And all the time carrying these heavy bags that I had brought, mainly filled with books, you know. And I remember struggling with those bags, but anyway, I made it. And then he said, okay, stay with me in the evening. When I finish, we'll go to my house. And I said, oh, I'll get a real meal, you know. Because it was that what I got from the Hindu hotel was vegetarian, but it did have onions. It wasn't really, but it was all there was, and I had, you know, felt I had to have something. So it turned out that his wife was away. So it was left to the two of us to come up, you know, with our own preparations. But we managed. We came up with some khichdi and some vegetables. And we didn't starve. And, you know, soon Amogha Lila came and started getting invitations. And the feasts began, which is the usual condition of devotees. But the fact is, I've just never seen a devotee starve. You know, Krishna does provide. Krishna does provide. He may not provide for us to live lavishly or extravagantly, but he always provides what we need. Yogakshema bhajamya. So, and then, Atma Nikshepa, full self-surrender. Surrender ourselves to Krishna. Surrender ourselves to the holy name, to the process of chanting the holy name. And Karpanya, humility. Now there's another type of humility, or another aspect of humility. One is we realize how fallen we are, and we cry out to Krishna to save us, Krishna, the holy name, the Vaishnavas. Another type comes when we start coming closer to God and we realize how great He is. And when we see how great He is, it's humbling because we realize in comparison how small we are. You know, we may be proud of whatever it is. Say we might be proud of our intelligence. If we meet someone who's more intelligent than we are, we're humbled. You know, we might think that we're wealthy, but we may meet someone much more wealthy than we are, and that's humbling. So Krishna, or beauty, any of the opulences, Krishna has all the opulences in full. So it's compared to, when we compare ourselves to Him, it's very humbling. And that's good. That's good. So we're chanting. And as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in his Shikshastika, Nam Nam Akari Bahudan Nijasarva Shaktis Tatrarpita Niyamitas Marane Nakala Etadrishita Vakripa Bhagavan Mamapi Dridaivam Idrisham Ihajani Nanuraga. O my Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, in your holy name there is all good fortune for the living entity. And therefore you have many such names, such as Krishna and Govinda, by which you expand yourself. You have invested all your potencies in those names, and there are no hard and fast rules for remembering them. My dear Lord, although you bestow such mercy upon the fallen conditioned souls by liberally teaching your holy names, I am so unfortunate that I commit offenses while chanting the holy name, and therefore I do not achieve attachment for chanting. So this is our problem. This is why we don't have attachment, anurag. Right? We don't have attachment, we commit offenses. And then, as we mentioned yesterday, that there, when we chant the names of Nitai Gauranga, or the names of the Panchatattva mantra, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, they do not consider offenses. And therefore we chant the holy names of the Panchatattva mantra first, before we chant the Hare Krishna Maha mantra. When Srila Prabhupada first gave us the Panchatattva mantra, he said that we chant it first because it will help us to chant the Hare Krishna Maha mantra. Because by chanting the names of Nitai Gauranga or Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, we become ecstatic. And then when we chant the Hare Krishna Maha mantra, we can do so without offense. Or, if not ecstatic, blessed by their mercy. Now, there are 10 offenses, and yesterday we discussed the first, sadhu ninda, to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives for propagating the holy name of the Lord. And there are two others that I would like to discuss in brief. They're mentioned in the purport to the verse that I quoted yesterday from Chaitanya Charitamrita. But still, the first one, we'll repeat it because it is so important. Satam ninda nam nam paramam aparadam vitanute. Yatakitam yatam katam usadate tadvigaraham. To blaspheme the great saintly persons who are engaged in preaching the glories of the Hare Krishna mantra is the worst offense at the lotus feet of the holy name. One should not criticize a preacher of the glories of the Hare Krishna Maha mantra. If one does so, he is an offender. The Nam Prabhu, who is identical with Krishna, will never tolerate such blasphemous activities, even from one who passes as a great devotee. Now, the eighth offense, this is very subtle, because embedded within the eighth offense are two words, api pramadaha. Keep up with the talk. Sometimes when we recite the 10 offenses as they're listed in the Nectar of Devotion in the morning program, someone will add at the end, it is also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. So where does that come from? And in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's list, he includes inattentiveness as one of the offenses, and he combines two of the others into one offense. And the reason is that these two words, api pramadaha, come at the end of the eighth offense. And that means there's also an offense to be inattentive. Pramada actually means like madness, craziness. And in a sense, it is a type of madness, because we're chanting the holy names. We're actually calling the names of Radha and Krishna, and they're responding to us. And then we ignore them. We're somewhere else. It's like you invite someone to your house and they come to the door, and then you get busy with something else and you ignore them. And then a minute later, you invite them again. They come again, and again you ignore them. It's a bit kooky. So that's what we're doing. We're calling Radha and Krishna. We want them to engage us in their service, and then when they come, we're somewhere else. It's like we're applying for a job. Imagine going for an important interview for a crucial job. I mean, what could be more crucial than being engaged in the service of the Lord? And when we come before our potential employer, where our eyes are wandering around the room and, like, you know, just, and, hello, are you the person who applied for the job? You take out your cell phone, you talk to your friends. Hello, did you really want this job? So it's like we're asking Krishna to engage us in his service, and then our minds are somewhere else. You know, what kind of an impression are we going to create in our future employer? So anyway, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that inattentiveness is the root of all the other offenses. That if we can chant attentively, we can become free from all the other offenses. And to the contrary, if we chant inattentively, then the other offenses are able to flourish. And now we come to the last offense. In the list in the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada renders it to not have complete faith in the chanting of Hare Krishna and to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on the matter. It's not an offense to have material attachments because we all come with them. But it is an offense to hold on to them. And we have the tendency. I had my own experience. During one period I was really focusing on my japa. And one morning I woke up, I was like so eager, and I, you know, just couldn't wait to bathe and dress and get ready and begin to chant. And then the next morning I woke up and I felt sort of sad. I thought, oh, why am I feeling sad? I mean, there is a type of sadness that we feel because we realize we've turned away from Krishna and we've become separated from him. But I felt sad, you know, with a little introspection, I felt sad because I thought if I keep chanting like this, I'll lose some of the things that are dear to me that I'm attached to. And I felt sad. No, I felt sad. And then I thought, actually, I don't have faith in the holy name. If I had faith that everything I wanted, all the happiness that I could want, all the love I could want, everything I could want, I could get from the holy name, I could get from Krishna, I wouldn't be afraid of losing these attachments. So I realized I don't really have faith. Because if I had faith, I would surrender fully to the process of chanting and have faith that everything that I want, I'll get from the holy name. But I actually don't have that faith. And that's why I think I need this and that. And I don't want to let go of them because I feel if I do let go of them, those sources of happiness will be gone. And then I thought, you know, do I really have faith in Krishna? You know, and it's that same thing that we have the divine and demonic within us. You know, do I really have faith in Krishna? Do I believe that Krishna exists? Or am I like those people, like, you know, who's ever seen Krishna? You know? Who knows if Krishna really exists? This exists. We know this exists. I know my wife exists. I know my children exist. They're real. You know, my house exists. My car exists. My assets exist. I know they're real. We don't know if Krishna's real or not. Why should I give up this real stuff for Krishna, who's just something in books that people talk about? You know, we've never even seen him. So underneath it all, is that there in me? I was thinking, it must be. It is there in me. Otherwise, I'd have faith. I wouldn't be afraid of letting go what I'm attached to. And in my own case, it's... Well, anyway, each one of these could be a whole discussion, but that is in us. That is in us. And it's not such a simple thing that we have to learn the technique to chant, you know, the technique to receive the holy name. We actually have to want to receive the holy name. Receiving the holy name means you can't keep both at the same time. You can't keep Maya and Krishna at the same time. So receiving Krishna means Maya's going. So yeah, of course, we're devotees. We want Krishna. Krishna, yay. Maya, nay. But when it really comes down to it, you know, when it really comes down to it, you know, how much faith do we have in Krishna and the holy name? How much faith do we have in the real things of the world? And according to our faith, we'll be attached, you know. So it's really quite serious. It's really quite serious. Again, we really need the devotees. It's the association of devotees that can save us. You know? Their faith, their realization. Because, you know, 99% of the world, or more, 99.99, they don't have faith in Krishna. They don't even really have faith in God. They like to believe that God is there to fulfill their desires. Like after 9/11, all these signs, God bless America. Meaning, you know, God protect us from the demons. You know? And, well, anyway, but so most people have that idea, like, God bless us. God bless us this day with our daily blessings. Material things. We don't really give up anything material in that type of religiousness. We don't give up anything material, and rather we think that by being pious, God will give us more material things. We'll be more prosperous, more comfortable, more happy. But this Cheto Darpano Marjanam, cleansing the heart, we have to want that. And although on a certain level we do, because we're devotees, we've heard the philosophy, we've learned the philosophy, we speak the philosophy, and But do we? How much do we really believe it? How much do we really believe it? How much faith do we really have? Are we really ready to let go of these attachments and take shelter of the holy name and Krishna? Now, having said that, giving up the attachment does not necessarily mean giving up the thing. It, on the deepest level, it means changing our relationship with the thing. Say, to give a common example, say a husband and a wife. Or, so now we're accustomed in this demonic mood that's brought us into the material world, accustomed to thinking, this is my wife. She's meant for me to enjoy. She's meant to serve me. And, you know, when we're chanting, you know, we might be thinking of her, you know, making sure the relationship is all right. We might want to make sure she'll still cook for us, still clean the house, still take care of the child. We don't want any disruption. We're thinking about our relationship with her. Is everything in order? And when we should be chanting. So then, we're a little introspective. We think, oh, and of course, one is, okay, but we've got to leave this and just focus back on the holy name, which is correct. But at some stage, we might consider, why is my mind going to my wife? Whatever it is. You know, underneath it all, I'm thinking I'm the center. And she's very important for my enjoyment. She's important for my well-being. She's important for my future. That means I'm the center. I'm the proprietor, my wife. I'm the controller. I want her to do what I do, want her to do. I'm the enjoyer. I want her to do all these things so ultimately I can be happy. That's the underlying. And the more literal translation of the tenth offense, as mentioned in this purport by Srila Prabhupada, if one has heard the glories of the transcendental holy name of the Lord, but nevertheless continues in a materialistic concept of life, thinking I am this body and everything belonging to this body is mine, and does not show respect and love for the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that is an offense. So, depending on what the attachment is, we might have to reject it. But given that we're devotees, we hope that the things to which we are attached are not in principle unfavorable to Krishna consciousness. It may just be our relationship with them has to be changed. Like money. If we have money and we think, you know, I'm the proprietor, this is my money, I'm the enjoyer, this money is meant to be spent on my sense gratification, that's a material attachment. But if we think, you know, everything is Krishna's energy, it's meant to be engaged in Krishna's service, let me use this money in Krishna's service, let me print books, distribute books, buy property for the temple, build a temple, then that's not Maya. That's not a material attachment. So, in his list of the 64 items of devotional service given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami lists some items that he did not include in the list, that one might think should have been included, and he explains why. And one of the items is the cultivation of renunciation. Both knowledge and renunciation, jnana and vairagya. And this, goes back to the basic question of what makes one eligible for pure devotional service. And here Srila Rupa Goswami quotes a verse from the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yadrichaya mat katadau jata shradas tuya puman na nirvino nati sakto bhakti yogosya siddhada. If somehow or other, or by good fortune, one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories, such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. So, of course, the first thing is faith, ado shraddha. That's the basic qualification. But beyond faith, there's na nirvina and nati sakta. Nati sakta means one shouldn't be too attached to material things. If one is too attached, he won't be able to take to bhakti yoga. He'll take to karma yoga or karma. And na nirvina, one shouldn't be too detached. One shouldn't be too negative. One shouldn't be too disgusted with material things. Otherwise, one will take to jnana yoga or jnana. One should be in the middle, not too attached, like a karmi, and not too detached, like a jnani. One should be in the middle and have faith. Now, by taking this position, the question could arise, well, if renunciation is not an item of devotional service, doesn't mean we should be attached. And of course, obviously, we should not be attached. And here Rupa Goswami has placed two very important verses in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which unfortunately didn't make it into this presentation. But the first one describes yukta vairagya, anasaktasya vishayan, that without being attached to the objects of the senses, if one engages them in the service of Krishna, nirbande Krishna sambande, if one understands their relationship with Krishna and thus engages them in the service of Krishna, that is called yukta vairagya, or appropriate renunciation, detachment. And opposed to yukta vairagya is phalgu vairagya. And there, Rupa Goswami says that if one rejects material things not understanding their relationship with Krishna, Harisambandha, Vastuna, that is called Phalgu Vairagya, or artificial renunciation. There's actually a river in Bihar called the Phalgu River, which appears like sand. It appears to be dry land or sand. But underneath, there's a whole river. There's a very strong current under the sand. And the idea is that impersonalists, they may appear to be very renounced, but without Krishna consciousness, without Yukta Vairagya, their renunciation is artificial. And under this surface, under the thin veneer of renunciation, is a strong current of material desire. So we have to develop Yukta Vairagya, which is possible only by development of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's a thin line. On the one hand, we don't want to enjoy Krishna's property. That would be wrong. But at the same time, we don't want to renounce Krishna's property, because that would also be wrong, because it's not our property to renounce. You know, it's like, you know, if I were to say, I renounce the Golden Gate Bridge. But it's not mine to renounce, you know, whether. So nothing is ours to renounce, and nothing is ours to enjoy. Everything is Krishna's energy and meant to be engaged in Krishna's service. And that applies to the things most near and dear to us, our husband, our wives, our children, our homes, our cars, our assets. And the process of purification by chanting the holy name, Cheto Darpano Marjanam, doesn't mean that we have to give up our wife or husband or children or home or car or whatever. But it means we have to give up the false conception that we are the proprietors and controllers and enjoyers, and see them really as Krishna's property and try to engage them in Krishna's service. And that is a challenge, because we are habituated to thinking, you know, we're the center and everything is meant for our enjoyment. I mean, we might have developed some bad habits in japa over the last 1 year or 5 years or 20 years. But the habit of wanting to enjoy material things has been with us since we were born. It's actually been with us since our past lives. It's been with us through our entire journey within the material world. So that is a very old habit. And just like we want to reform our japa, we need to reform everything about our lives so that that everything in our life is favorable to our japa. And again, we're coming to anukulyasya sankalpa, making everything favorable to Krishna consciousness. And here there's a very important couple of verses from Queen Kunti's prayers to Lord Krishna. And they raise this issue, especially about our attachment to family. Our first attachment is to the body, and our secondary attachments are to the things that are related to the body, that give pleasure to the body and mind. And generally, those are our wife and children and loved ones, relatives. So Queen Kunti, a completely surrendered soul, prays to Krishna, Ata Vishveshva Vishvatmam Vishva Smirte Sukeshume Sneha Pasham Imam Chindi Jidham Pandu Suvrishnishu. O Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, O personality of the form of the universe, please, therefore, sever my tie of affection for my kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis. The Pandavas, those are her sons, all great devotees, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjun, Nakul, Sahadeva. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that, and on the other side, her brother was Vasudeva, the father of Krishna. So, and, you know, the whole Vishnu dynasty, Lord Krishna's personal family. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada raises the question that affection for devotees is not outside the range of devotional service. Because we discussed the very first definition of Uttama Bhakti, Krishna Anushilanam. Krishna includes his name, his form, his qualities, his pastimes, his paraphernalia, and his devotees. They're also included in Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada raises the question that affection for devotees is not outside the range of pure devotional service. So why is Kunti praying that her tie of affection, sneha pasham, be cut off, chindi? And Srila Prabhupada explains that what Kunti is actually praying is that the material side of her affection to her kinsmen, which is based on the body, that should be cut off. And the spiritual feature of the affection can remain. We don't have to reject the relationship if the relationship in principle is favorable, but we purify the relationship. Some relationships have to be abandoned. They're just not favorable. Of course, on a gross level, one might be attached to drinking wine. But we have to abandon that attachment because it's unfavorable. We can't really purify it unless we switch to grape juice or something. But wine itself is not an attachment that we can really dovetail. And there are other relationships, you know, that cannot be dovetailed. If a person is, anyway, we don't need to go into that. But in ordinary circumstances, in Grihastha Ashram, the relationships with our family members can be purified through Krishna consciousness. And therefore, it's so important for all the family members to be Krishna conscious, to purify the whole household existence. You know? And then we don't have to reject the relationship. We had a wonderful devotee. I mean, this is such an instructive story. Such an instructive story. Again, it relates to Pakistan. We had a very wonderful devotee in Pakistan named Anoop Bhattacharya. He was actually born in East Bengal. He grew up near a temple of Mahaprabhu. He didn't even know who Mahaprabhu was. But later when he met us, he understood, oh, that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he, as a child, used to play there. And he immediately wanted to buy all of Prabhupada's books. I mean, it was amazing. But everything, full set of Srimad Bhagavatam, full set of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, the Nectar of Devotion, all the books. And he was seriously reading them. And at one stage, and his wife wasn't so favorable. At one stage, he thought, he'll just move into the ashram. The ashram really meant an apartment that a Mogalila had. And maybe once in a while, there was another boy with us at the ashram, and sometimes I would stay there when I visited. And he was a boon, because he was a great cook. He used to make these nice Bengali vegetables, and it was like eating out of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he was so faithful, you know, he would look up the recipes and he would quote to us, you know, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would eat these preparations and say these are his favorites. So, and he was so devotional, he was ready to do anything and everything, and he loved to chant, and we were in bliss. But his wife was quite aggrieved. And she would phone him, and sometimes common friends, because the Hindu community in Karachi wasn't that big then, maybe now, but then Pakistan was 98% Muslim, 1% Hindu, and 1% Christian. So sometimes we get reports that his wife is very upset. Now, we were at that stage of ISKCON where we thought we should just surrender to Krishna and don't worry about that Maya. But fortunately, we did understand that his leaving her like that and leaving his children like that wasn't good. Eventually we realized it wasn't good. He should go back to her. And he did. He was very dutiful. And this is the point. He wasn't too attached and he wasn't too disgusted. He went back. And from then on, once he understood that this was his duty, from then on, he became like the ideal husband and ideal father. He was still a devotee. He was still a devotee, but he spent the majority of his time with his wife and children, which is usually what you have to do, especially when the children are young. And then it so happened that he had the means to emigrate to India. And he settled in Pune and came to the Association of the Devotees there. And gradually, his wife became favorable. To begin with, she was not favorable. And when he left her to live in the ashram, you can imagine how favorable she was. But by his exemplary behavior as a grihastha, he didn't compromise his principles in Krishna consciousness, but he was exemplary as a husband and a father. She gradually became favorable. and the children became favorable. And by the time I visited, for a while I actually had some visa problems and I couldn't go to India because of my visits to Pakistan. By the time I got back to India, his whole family was very favorable. And at the first Puna Yatra, you know, Anoop came and he was initiated by then, and it was wonderful to see how advanced he had become. And then it happened by nature's course that his wife left her body. They were reasonably old by then and the children were grown. She left her body and he moved into the temple in Chaupati. And he lived as a vanaprastha. And at that time he was like the only elder in the brahmachari ashram. He was like their father and mother. And he was super. I mean, they're all super brahmacharis, but he was really super vanaprastha. He would live with them, sleep on the floor, get up early, you know, be in the temple for the whole morning program. He would do everything. And on top of it, care for them, because he was older and more mature and experienced. So if they were sick, he would take care of them and just do all sorts of services for them. He was very beloved to all the devotees. And eventually, when he was quite a bit older, he got sick, as will happen to all of us, and eventually he left his body in a very exalted state of Krishna consciousness. And I think he's really a wonderful example. He wasn't too attached or too detached. He just wanted to do his duty. When he thought his duty was to leave his family at an early stage, he left them, which was wrong. And when he realized his duty was to take care of them and be Krishna conscious and help them to become Krishna conscious, he did that perfectly. And he was successful. By the end, his wife was chanting 16 rounds. I don't think she took initiation, but she was chanting 16 rounds. Children also. And then when she passed on and the children were grown up, he understood, now it's my duty, I'm a vanaprastha, I should live in the temple, which is a holy place, and serve the Vaishnavas and chant the holy name full time. And he left his body in perfect Krishna consciousness. So we don't have to reject anything material, but we do our duty. We do our duty. Now, Yogya Purush Prabhu, do you know how much time we have?
Officially, it was supposed to be 11, but we started a little late.
Okay. So what I would like to do is take a 2-minute break and come back, and maybe more like 5 minutes, and you could either lead them in some exercise. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So just to return to the story of Abhiram Thakur Das, Anup Bhattacharya, he was very attached to me from when I would visit Karachi. And then he moved to India, and I couldn't visit India because of my visa problems. And there, as I mentioned, he came to the Association of the Devotees in Pune, and he took initiation from His Holiness Radhanath Swami. So when I returned to India, I attended the Pune Yatra of His Holiness Radhanath Swami with his devotees. And at the end of the Yatra, Radhanath Swami and I rode on the train with the other devotees from Bombay, were the majority of the devotees. And Abhiram Thakur, because he lived in Pune, he was on the platform to see us off, but he stayed on the platform. And Radhanath Swami and I came to the door, because we were going to be on the train with all the other devotees between Pune and Bombay, so we came to the door way, and we were next to each other. I had my arm around his shoulders, and he had his arm around me, and we were like looking at Abhiram Thakur, and Abhiram Thakur was weeping. He was just so happy because the two people to whom he was most attached were together, and that was such a happy moment for him and a happy occurrence, because of many reasons. So the point I'm making here is that Abhiram Thakur had a very soft heart. He had a very soft heart. He was crying out of happiness. And that brings us back to the point of why the cultivation of renunciation, independent of Krishna consciousness or as a separate item, is not really part of pure devotional service. Because Rupa Goswami says that the real activities of devotional service, which are mainly hearing and chanting about Krishna and remembering him, make the heart soft. Whereas the cultivation of knowledge, Brahma Gyan, and the cultivation of renunciation or the performance of artificial austerities can make the heart hard. Both make the heart hard. Artificial austerities makes the heart hard, and sense gratification and material attachment also makes the heart hard. Bhakti makes the heart soft. And so again we come to the point, we don't want to maintain material attachments. Those make the heart hard. You know, people do so many horrible things for the sake of their material attachments. But artificial austerities also make the heart hard. And therefore, we really want to follow the true process of bhakti, which is principally shravanam, kirtanam, Vishnu smaranam. That will make the heart soft. and that will make us naturally detached. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayatyasu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayadahaitakam. That by performance of Bhakti Yoga, causeless knowledge and detachment follow. And that detachment is not artificial renunciation. That detachment is manifest in Yukta Vairagya. Seeing everything as Krishna's property, seeing oneself as servant of Krishna, and everything that belongs to Krishna, and trying to engage everything in Krishna's service. And when I was in India last December, I gave a Sunday talk in Chaupati, and immediately after the talk, Radhana Swami got off from that asan, large asan that is reserved for him and the speakers and his godbrothers and other speakers. And, you know, he went to the doorway. And in the meantime, I was also meeting people. And afterwards, he came to me. He was so happy and so excited. He said, "You'll never guess who turned up." He said, "You'll never guess. You'll be so happy to hear this." He said, "They're Abhiram Thakur's son and daughter." It's like so many years later. And they came specially to see him, to see Radhana Swami. And they're chanting, and he was just so happy that they were. And he's very, of course, he's full of love for everyone, for all devotees. But I've seen he takes special care of devotees' relatives, especially their children, who might not be, they might be strict or they might not be strict, but because they're children of his godbrothers and godsisters, he takes special care of them. Like the last time, I think it was the last time he stayed with me, he spent a whole, not just evening, late into the night, which was really off of his approved schedule for his health, with Sambadas, Hayagriva Prabhu's son. And it's, of course, I'm sure he cares for Sambadas, but it was Hayagriva Prabhu's son. And so, and I've seen it with so many. Even Burijan Prabhu's son, Jaiguru Pad, he lives in Bombay now. He's sort of an aspiring Bollywood actor. And he's just like so affectionate to him because of Burijan Prabhu. And he announced, because, you know, he understood the boy's psychology. He announced to the devotees, you know, do not preach to him. Just be nice to him. Do not preach to him. And as a result, you know, Jaiguru Pad really likes to visit the Chaupati temple and be with Radhana Swami and the devotees there. So anyway, there are just so many examples. But it's a very relishable topic, but it's not quite on the subject. But that also extends to Srila Prabhupada's family. You know, Radhanath Swami was in a very friendly relationship with Srila Prabhupada's granddaughter, who took initiation in ISKCON from His Holiness Jayapataka Swami, and then such a tragedy, she died, you know, in a flood in Mayapur. And then this last time when we were both in Calcutta and Mayapur together. He visited Prabhupada's son, the father of the girl who was lost in the flood, Vrindavan Chandra Day. He really extended himself to Vrindavan Chandra and his family. But anyway, just coming back to this point about Abhiram Thakur, he had a very soft heart, and he wasn't too attached or too detached, but he did his duty. And I was thinking what a rare example he is for us. We have examples of exemplary brahmacharis. A very good example is coming tomorrow, Radhe Shyam Prabhu from Pune, coming to visit San Jose. And we have many examples of exemplary grihasthas. We have examples of exemplary sannyasis. But Abhiram Thakur was a rare example because he was exemplary as a grihastha and as a vanaprastha, you know, as a householder and as a renunciate. And we don't have many of those in ISKCON yet. Vaisheshika Prabhu may become one. Seriously. He's been an exemplary grihastha. He and his wife both have been exemplary grihasthas. And from what I understand, they're moving in the direction in which they'll be exemplary vanaprasthas. And eventually, he'll probably become an exemplary sannyasi. Vaisheshika Prabhu ki jai. And you can't take sannyas really properly. You can't take sannyas. There could be exceptions, no doubt there can be exceptions, but ideally one should not take sannyas without the blessings of the wife. And for the wife to encourage the husband to take sannyas means the wife has to be Krishna conscious. It's not something that the husband does on his own. I mean, it could in some circumstances, but ideally, it's something he should do with the blessings of his wife. And her blessings will come if she's Krishna conscious. So it means that the two have to be Krishna conscious together. That means no artificial renunciation and no sense gratification. It means just Krishna consciousness. They can be very good friends, they can be the best of friends on the basis of Krishna consciousness. Then they can be ideal vanaprasthas and he can be an ideal sannyasi. She can be an ideal former wife of a present sannyasi, which is not a small thing. In Vedic culture, the ladies of the renunciates, they would hold a very esteemed position in society. They were like gurus in their own right. So this is the result of pure Krishna consciousness. And as one progresses in pure Krishna consciousness, one becomes attached to Krishna. That's what progressing in Krishna consciousness means. That by becoming attached from Krishna to Krishna, we naturally become detached from sense gratification. Doesn't mean we become detached from the objects of the world or the people in the world, but we become detached from sense gratification. And coming back to our discussion of the different stages The different stages are really degrees of attachment to Krishna. You know, ado shraddha tata sadhu sangha tata bhajana kriya. I think most of us are in the stage of bhajana kriya, engaging in the practice of devotional service. But again, we might be in the anishtita stage, unsteady. We engage, but we're not steady. Even we make vows, we'll do this, we'll do that, but we can't keep our vows because we're not steady yet. Then we go through that period of anartha nivritti, and then we come to the stage of steadiness, nishtita bhakti or nishta. Then after that comes ruchi. Ruchi means taste. In the stage of ruchi, your taste for hearing and chanting and remembering Krishna far exceeds your taste for anything else. And after ruchi comes the stage of ashakti, which means attachment. In the stage of ashakti, one is attached to Krishna. In the stage of ruchi, one's attachment is more for the activities of devotional service, for hearing and chanting and remembering. Whereas in ashakti, one's attachment is for the object of the service, which is Krishna, Radha and Krishna. And then from ashakti, one comes to the stage of bhava, and that is the stage of direct revelation of Krishna, direct perception of Krishna. That's the beginning of love of Godhead. So I'm going to read. Yeah, so chanting with genuine spiritual feeling. Chanting with genuine spiritual feeling, or experiencing any aspect of Krishna consciousness with genuine spiritual feeling, means the heart has to be in the proper condition. In other words, it shouldn't be hard. It should be soft. And that is achieved by hearing and chanting, and by letting go of material attachments, and also avoiding artificial renunciation. It's just pure bhakti. It's pure bhakti. Then one can have genuine spiritual feelings, like Abhiram Thakur demonstrated, and we know from examples of advanced devotees. So I'm going to read a morning walk conversation, and we'll be handing this out in these verses out later. This took place in Nairobi on November 2nd, 1975. Devotee: when chanting our 16 rounds, we are not sure if these rounds are sincere. Prabhupada: you should be sure. Devotee: how can we be sure? Prabhupada: there are beads. Brahmananda: no, he's saying that when we chant our rounds, how can we be sure that when we chant the round, that the round is a perfect attentive round, sincere? Prabhupada: therefore it is Shastra. You must. There is no question of understanding. Now, do you understand what Prabhupada just said? The devotee is asking, how can we understand if our round is sincere? And Prabhupada said, there's no question of understanding. The Shastra says you chant, so you just chant. That's what Prabhupada just said. I'll continue. Brahmananda. See, Brahmananda, this is also one of the special features of Srila Prabhupada that sometimes it seemed like he didn't understand a question or wasn't answering it, but actually he was. But maybe they didn't get the answer, they didn't like the answer. So they asked the question again. So Brahmananda says, Prabhupada says, you must. There's no question of understanding. And Brahmananda says, the quality of the chanting, he's asking. How can we make the quality the best? Prabhupada, quality you'll understand. First of all, come to the quality. And so you're asking, how will you understand when you're chanting with quality? And Prabhupada saying, first come to the quality, then you'll understand. How can you understand if you haven't come to the stage of quality? Quality you'll understand. First of all, come to the quality. Without having quality, how will you understand the quality? You follow the instruction of your spiritual master of Shastra. That is your duty. Quality, no quality. It is not your position to understand. When the quality comes, there is no force. You will have a taste for chanting. You will desire at that time, why 16 rounds? Why not 16,000 rounds? That is quality. Now it is by force. You'll not do it, therefore at least 16 rounds. But when you come to the quality, you will feel yourself. Why 16? Why not 16,000? That is quality, automatically. Now, I do want to mention, because Prabhupada is going to himself mention this different stages of bhakti, that it's not that one is fixed in a particular stage. I mean, generally, we might be at the stage, say, of Anisthita Bhajana Kriya or Nishthita Bhajana Kriya or Ruchi or whatever. But whatever stage we're generally in, we can at any time experience a higher stage or a lower stage. You know, we might be generally in a particular stage, but under certain favorable circumstances or by some special mercy, we can experience a higher stage. And as I was hearing the reports of the devotees' experience in the japa circle with Tulsi, I was thinking they were experiencing a higher stage than usual. And one of the symptoms of a shakti, at the stage of a shakti, if your mind wanders, just like now, our mind wanders, we don't know how it wandered. And then we have to bring it back. In the stage of a shakti, your mind wanders, but automatically it comes back. You don't know how it came back. But it's just the opposite. Like now, we're chanting, suddenly our mind is gone. We didn't even notice how it happened. And in the stage of a shakti, if by chance your mind wanders, suddenly it comes back. You don't even know how it came back. And that's what devotees were saying yesterday, that even if their mind wandered, it didn't stick. It came back. And in some cases, it came back without them even knowing how or why or making any effort. It just came back. So we can glimpse higher stages even when we're not at that stage. And unfortunately, sometimes we can also glimpse a lower stage that we've already passed out of, but not completely out of for all time. And so, but now we're discussing quality and what Prabhupada's definition of quality is. Now it is by force. because you'll not do it, you know, therefore we prescribed at least 16 rounds. But when you come to the quality, you will feel yourself, why 16? Why not 16,000? Like at our japa retreat in Joshua Tree, Mahatma Prabhu put up on the paper, today I get to chant 64 rounds. You know, not like today I have to chant 64 rounds. Today I get to chant 64 rounds. And more. You know, when you're in that stage, you want to chant more. That is quality. Just like Haridas Thakur, he was not forced. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested, now you are old enough, you can reduce. But he refused. No, up to the end of my life, I will continue. That is quality. Have you got such tendency that you will go on chanting and do nothing else? That is quality. Now you are forced. Where is the question of quality? But this is given as a chance so that one day you'll come to the quality. Not that you have come to the quality now. Quality is different. Atasaktis. Atasakti. Attachment. Just like Rupa Goswami says, how shall I chant with one tongue and how shall I hear with two ears? Had it been millions of tongues and trillions of ears, then I could enjoy it. That is quality. Quality is not so cheap. Maybe after many births. For the time being, you go on following the rules and regulations. It is being done by force. So you wanted to understand quality. This is the quality. You'll not be forced, but automatically you'll desire. That is quality. I'm writing books. I'm not being forced by anyone. Everyone can do that. Why do others not do it? Why do I get up at night, 1 o'clock, and do this work? Because I cannot do without it. So this applies not just to chanting japa, this is a general principle of devotional service. How will one do it artificially? He's talking about getting up at 1 a.m. and translating. So to come back, I'm writing books. I'm not being forced by anyone. Everyone can do that. Why one does not do it? I cannot do without it. How one will do it artificially? This is quality. Therefore, they like my purports. That quality is shown by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sanyaitam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. Oh, I do not see Govinda. The whole world is vacant. This is quality. Just like we have got practical example, one man's beloved has died and he's seeing the whole universe vacant. Is it vacant? That is the quality of love. So there is no formula of quality. It is to be understood by yourself. Just like if after eating something you feel refreshed and get strength, that is quality. You don't have to take certificate. Will you give me a certificate that I have eaten? Nobody says, how do I know if I've eaten? Well, you know you've eaten. You feel satisfied. You feel energized. So it's the same thing with quality. You don't have to ask, am I chanting with quality? When the quality comes, you'll know you're chanting with quality. You don't have to ask for someone to certify. You will understand whether you have eaten or not. That is quality. When you will feel so much ecstasy in chanting Hare Krishna, That is quality. Not artificially. Chant. Chant. Otherwise get out. That's for temple devotees. You don't chant your 16 rounds, you have to get out. You can't live in the temple if you don't chant 16 rounds. This is not quality chant or you have to get out. But this is an expectation that someday you will come to the quality. That requires time. So that's patience. That's one of the requirements for success. Utsaha, we have to be enthusiastic. We have to be enthusiastic. Nischayat daryat. We have to be confident that if I continue, I will be successful by the grace of the Lord. But we also have to be patient. Srila Prabhupada said that enthusiasm without patience can lead to a desire to control. Like even we want to chant attentively, but if we're not patient, you know, we want to control by force. But like Yajna Purush Prabhu said, you can't force it. You can't force it, no matter how hard you try. Depends. You have to receive the mercy, you have to receive the holy name. And Prabhupada also said that patience without enthusiasm can lead to lethargy. I got plenty of time. First of all, I'm only 40 years old. You know, let me enjoy for a while. And second of all, Prabhupada said it may take many lifetimes, so I'm patient. You know, meanwhile, I'll go about my household affairs and my economic development and my sense gratification. I've got time. So that's patience without enthusiasm. And that can lead to lethargy. So we want both. Very enthusiastic. Get up early. Chant those rounds. Take a little prasad. Do some more service. And read Prabhupada's books. And distribute his books. And take a little prasad. Do kirtan. Take rest early. We want to be enthusiastic, but also patient. We can't expect that overnight we're going to suddenly be on the stage of a Shakti, a Bhava. So this is an expectation that someday you will come to the quality. That requires time. That requires sincerity. But quality is there. Shravanadi shuddha chitte kareye udai. It will be awakened. In other words, it's already there. It's in your heart. It just has to be awakened. It's not something that you achieve, you know, like by your effort, but it's something you receive by grace. It's manifest. It's awakened. It's already there. So we just have to continue. And there is another verse. We didn't read it, but it came. That should encourage us. That if one commits offenses, what does one do? One continues to chant. A nice verse from the Padma Purana. Nama parada yuktanam namani eva harantyagam avi charanti prayuktani tani evartha karantachi cha. The chanting of Hare Krishna is recommended for persons who commit offenses. Because if they continue chanting, they will gradually chant offenselessly. Even if in the beginning one chants the Hare Krishna mantra with offenses, one will become free from such offenses by chanting again and again. And then the one point that can triumph over all, because Yesterday we discussed Namaparad, Vaishnavaparad, that it lingers even after Nishta. That means after Anarthana Vritti. And there are these different stages of eradication of anarthas. There's partial, pervasive, complete, absolute. So the effects of anarthas created by Namaparad or Vaishnavaparad, they continue. They're only partially eradicated by Nishta, they continue. The eradication is pervasive at the stage of bhava. It's not even complete, but it's general. Bhava, that's bhava bhakti, it's the beginning of love of Godhead, ecstatic love of Godhead is bhava bhakti. In prema bhakti, it's complete. There's no more anarthas caused by Namaparad or Vaishnavaparad. But there's another stage called absolute. Complete means it's completely gone, but it can come back. And absolute means it's completely gone and it can never come back. And that comes only when you attain the lotus feet of Krishna. I mean, that's how pesky, one of those pesky little spots that are hard to get out. That's how pesky the effects of anarthas created by Vaishnavaparad are. Namaparad. So, last night we were discussing after the workshop that if by nishta, after anartha nivritti, by nishta, it's nashta praya, almost destroyed. And what's not destroyed in particular is the anarthas created by Namaparad. You know, what is our hope? How are we ever going to go back to Godhead? So I'll conclude with one story. Srila Prabhupada gave a class in which he said, in order to go back to Godhead, you must be 100% pure. So when he said that, the devotees looked a little discouraged. Then Prabhupada said, 90%. They still looked concerned. And Prabhupada said, 80%. And he said, 75%, but that's the limit. Now, in one lecture, in this verse, Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu, and Prabhupada says, Praya, almost destroyed, he says 75%. That means we have to pass through anartha nivritti. We have to come to the stage of nishta, then 75% are destroyed. And then according to Prabhupada's merciful concession, we can go back to God. But that's still pretty advanced. To go pass through anartha nivritti, it's still pretty advanced. So after the lecture, you know, as usual, the devotees would gather around Srila Prabhupada and follow him. And he said, actually, if you just hold on to my lotus feet, I will take you back to Godhead. I have the key to the back door. So what we're discussing, all these different stages and practices, that's the way to get in the front door. But if we start to get hopeless, I'm never going to make it. If you take full shelter of Srila Prabhupada and hold on to his lotus feet, he has the key to the back door. But, and I think many of our contemporaries, they have gone back to Godhead by holding on to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. I don't know, you know, what stage they were at, but I'm confident they went back to Godhead because they held on to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet to the end, and his mercy took them back to Godhead. And holding on to his lotus feet means they just dedicated themselves heart and soul to Prabhupada's mission. You know, they chanted their rounds, they followed the principles, they did their duty. But ultimately, they accepted Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet as their heart and soul. And that carried them back to Godhead.